but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, you've seen the bracket. You've had a chance to kick it around, fill it out, look at it, examine it for problems. The belly aching out there, the complaining, the finger pointing. Notre Dame taking their ball and saying, we're going home. I want your feedback and your reaction to the college football playoff bracket. I'll give you mine. And I have three things that need to be fixed as it pertains to the bracket. I'll tell you those three things in this segment. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want your reaction to the college football playoff bracket reveal. Yesterday it comes out. All day yesterday, people belly aching, complaining, finger pointing. Mario Cristobal at Miami saying, you can please some of the people some of the time, but damn it, we're in it, and that's all that matters. Notre Dame, the odd team out. As of yesterday morning at about 7 a.m., I looked at the betting odds in Las Vegas. Just curious to see what Vegas thought was going to happen. And if you go by the Vegas odds makers, you would have bet Notre Dame would make the field. The Irish were sitting there at 9-1 to win the whole thing yesterday morning. And then 9 o'clock, 9:15 Pacific time, as the bracket reveal was going down, and it became evident that Miami was in and Notre Dame was out, the bookmakers took the Irish off the board. They went from 9-1 to off the board. I'm going to talk a little bit about why I think that's important on today's show, but I want your feedback as well. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. Give me your overall takeaway. First thing you thought when you saw the bracket come out. Oregon, it couldn't have broken better for the Ducks. The way the bracket came out, Dan Lanning should have done a cartwheel right there in front of Autzen Stadium. He should have done two cartwheels. He gets James Madison at home. James Madison's coach, highly distracted, spending some time this week on Monday and Tuesday getting it going at UCLA. Then he'll get back to practicing with his team, I am told, Tuesday night, Wednesday, Thursday, and begin preparation for the opening round game at Autzen Stadium. I reached out to James Madison University. I said, hey, can we get the head football coach on the show? And they said, we'd love to give him to you, but he's currently under the jurisdiction of UCLA, and he's not going to be back in pocket until Wednesday, really. And then he's in full game preparation. And so it becomes evident that, like, not only is Oregon getting the home game that the Ducks wanted against JMU, they get a group of five team and the last team into the bracket. Oregon is the five seed. Worked out beautifully for Dan Lanning and the Ducks. I think there was a little bit of hand-wringing and concern that they might slip into the four spot after Georgia beat Alabama and Texas Tech was playing BYU. And so I think there was a little bit of nerves, I think, and Ohio State, Indiana going down. But it unfolded as it should for the Ducks. And Oregon ended up, I think, in the most advantageous position of anyone on the bracket. And the top of this bracket, Oregon does not have to deal with Georgia or Ohio State until they potentially get to the championship game. There is Texas Tech, and they're dangerous. And they might have the best defense in the entire bracket. But Oregon would get Texas Tech seemingly in this semifinal or quarterfinal round, and Texas Tech would be going through the same thing the Ducks were going through a year ago. And we watched all those teams that had first-round buys a year ago really kind of struggle in the early part of their games as they kicked off those quarterfinal rounds. I wonder if that will continue. We'll watch it in this year's bracket, but I think this unveiled very nicely for Oregon. The Ducks get James Madison in the opening round. They get the home game at Autzen Stadium. They will go to Miami to play in the Orange Bowl against Texas Tech after they win that game. Should they beat Texas Tech It'll be Indiana in the Peach Bowl in a semifinal. And then it would be back to Miami for the national championship game and a potential date with Ohio State or Georgia if you are projecting this bracket as it should unfold. 503-417-7575, you tell me what you saw. My big takeaways, one, Oregon got a great path and got a great result. Two, Notre Dame, love them or hate them, they got hosed by this committee. This committee, the figure skating committee, as Mark in Portland has deemed them long ago, saw a triple axel by Alabama end up with them slipping on the ice. They get beat by three touchdowns against Georgia. And then, you know, the committee really afraid to take an SEC team that played in the SEC championship game and downgrade them, leaves Alabama in, and then it becomes a beauty pageant between Miami and Notre Dame, and there's a head-to-head result there that tips Miami's way, and Notre Dame doesn't have the cover of a conference, doesn't have the cover of the ACC, not a full member in all sports, an independent in football. Doesn't have the cover that the SEC and ESPN provide. You know, if you leave Alabama out, you kind of got to deal with ESPN, who, by the way, is the rights holder in the college football playoff. Doesn't have the cover of the Big Ten and Tony Petitti, who could say, hey, you know, this is not what we signed up for. Doesn't even have the cover of the Group of Five, which really has protection, has some antitrust protection. People bellyaching about, oh, the Group of Five has two teams in this tournament. This is what college football agreed to in order to avoid litigation, because keep in mind, the Group of Five schools, if you take all the schools in the Group of Five, there's almost as many schools in the Group of Five as there are in the Power Four, and you can have a real antitrust lawsuit on your hands if you don't include those Group of Five teams. And oh, by the way, I kind of like it because it makes it a tournament. So quit complaining about the G5s getting in and go win your conference and go lose fewer games, and you won't have that to worry about. I want your takeaways. 503-417-7575. I also want you to tell me what you're going to do to fix this tournament, because I do think it's broken. I think you got a lot of coaches out there that are talking about it being broken. I think there's some things, obviously, from year one of the 12-team playoff that were tweaked and fixed. I think there's going to be more things that need to be tweaked and fixed. For example, you know, if you're somebody like the ACC, convoluted because you've got these conferences that have 16 or 18 teams in it. From a football perspective, you got the ACC's got 18 teams, the Big Ten's got 18 teams, you've got the SEC with 16. You got the Big 12 sitting there, and you're going and you're saying, gosh, you know, there's no head to head performances. This is why all these conferences have to go to like the fourth tiebreaker to determine who's getting in the conference championship game. The problem in the ACC was that five lost Duke got into the conference championship game and beat Virginia. Now, Duke and Virginia, nowhere near as good as Miami, but Miami lost out on the tiebreaker and didn't get to the conference championship game. I expect that the ACC and some of these conferences are going to fix their tiebreakers. If you're going to play a championship game, one of the tiebreakers to get to the championship game should just be, hey, who's the highest ranked team in the college football playoff rankings? Put Miami into that game so it can play its way into the tournament. Or, you know, there was a real risk as of Sunday morning that the ACC was going to be left out of this tournament altogether, and that two Group of Five schools were going to get in. I think the playoff committee, the figure skating committee, did a nice job with some mental gymnastics to get Miami into the field, but certainly Notre Dame got host. But I think, you know, you got to expand this bracket. I think, number one, I want to expand to 16 teams. I think we talked about this a year ago saying, gosh, are there 16 teams that are worthy? This year would have been a good year for 16 teams. There's going to be some years where you look at the bracket and you go, there aren't 16 teams that are worthy. But this is not one of them. I do think they'll expand. I think they need to go to 16. I think that's more money for everybody. That's more room for everybody. I think you capture a true field and nobody gets left out. There's no bad feelings from Notre Dame. The ACC and Notre Dame at odds now fighting. Second thing I would fix is I would say no buys. Everybody plays in the first round. One plays 16, two plays 15. Home games for the higher seeded eight teams. It's a 16-team bracket. We get rid of eight teams right away. Eight teams get to host. Everybody plays in the first round. There are no buys. Nobody's rusty. And then the third thing that I would do to fix this damn thing is, contractually, ESPN has got these Tuesday night reveal shows. And it's part of the deal, the CFP's deal with ESPN is, not just the games that are going to be played, but these Tuesday night shows where they reveal the bracket. And frankly, we find out in the end that the bracket reveal in week 13, 14 doesn't matter. What matters is the end of the year reveal. I'm okay with the reveal show, but can we create a rule that says that the hosts on ESPN are not allowed to speak during the show? Just reveal the bracket. Make them pantomime their pro-SEC bias. If they can't handle it, gag them and blindfold them. Put them on there. Just the incessant pandering from the SEC propaganda machine becomes a little much in the end. And I think in the end, it's what leaves a lot of people turned off. I want to know what you thought of the bracket reveal as well. 503-417-7575. Let's go to the phones. We're going to start in Eugene, Oregon. Cam's in Eugene, where they're going to host a first-round CFP game. Cam, what's up?
Hey, John. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope everybody there is doing well. I didn't think I was going to have anything to call in about this week with Oregon sitting neutral and Oregon State's season being over. But, you know, sure enough, it happened. You're right. The playoff committee was afraid to leave out the loser of the SEC title game, but that's, you're jumping into the story halfway there. They were afraid to do that after the SEC said the quiet part out loud and threatened to take their ball and go home if they didn't get preferential treatment. And I was certain with negative 3 yards rushing and getting walloped and being a three-loss team that we had seen all we needed to see from Alabama. They didn't need to be considered for the national title tournament. We knew, didn't know maybe who was going to be the national champion at the end of the year, but we knew it wasn't going to be Alabama after that SEC championship game. I was absolutely shocked to see that they got in over Notre Dame, and I'm no fan of Notre Dame. I think the Beavers' Fiesta Bowl victory over them is still one of the funniest things I've ever seen in sports. I loved it. But you got to look at it. And my mind goes to the BCS era. Remember how when it was USC, the father was the son, but then it was Cam Newton and it wasn't? We already know, it's documented, that the SEC went to the College Football Committee and said, you better give us preferential treatment. You better not treat us like those other conferences, or we're out of here. Is the reason why the rules are different during the BCS era for compliance, and why we joke now and say that the SEC was all paying people under the table and everybody knew it, but nobody was doing anything about it? Did the SEC go to the NCAA and threaten them the way they threatened the College Football Committee? I don't know if you've got room on your plate for some more investigative journalism, but if you're looking for a project, I would love to know why things happened the way they did during the BCS era. Now seeing them and the way they're treating the College Football Committee makes me wonder what was going on years ago, and I'd love to see some light shined on it.
Yeah, it really does go back to the BCS era and Roy Kramer, who just ironically recently passed away, and how the SEC wanted to formulate this postseason tournament and saw money in this postseason tournament, and then its media partner, ESPN, certainly now holding as the rights holder in this tournament, it gives the SEC a whole lot of clout when it comes to how this is formed. The Big Ten and the SEC are sitting there with a lot of influence because they did posture when the move from a 4-team playoff to a 12-team playoff was presented. They did posture like they were going to split away. I talked with, at the time, Kirk Schultz, who was the Washington State president, who was on the executive board of that CFP committee, and there was a real fear in the room that if the rest of college football didn't go along with what the SEC and the Big Ten were proposing, that there would be trouble, that, you know, they could potentially decide to just split away and do their own thing like the NFL. And, you know, Mike Oresko, who was the commissioner of the American at the time, told me, let's call their bluff. He wanted to call their bluff. He said he did not get the support from the Big 12 and the ACC that he needed. And in the end, they sort of had to acquiesce and accept the sort of the format that the SEC proposed. I do think it's interesting that the SEC has not participated in the national championship game in the last two seasons. It's been all about the Big Ten. It was Ohio State last year and Notre Dame. Year before that, it was Michigan and Washington. I think it's a big face-saving year for the SEC this year, and I only see one team from the SEC that I think can get to the championship game and maybe win it, and that's Georgia. I think Georgia's good enough. I think Ohio State is good enough. I think Indiana is good enough. I thought Notre Dame was good enough, but the committee did not agree. I think that the group of schools, there's three schools there that I mentioned, Indiana, Ohio State, and Georgia, that I think have a legit shot to win it. Then beyond that, I would just say that the only other teams in the bracket that I think could win the national championship are Texas Tech and Oregon. And I think they would have to get some help. It would have to line up just right for them in order to do it. But I think they're both capable of playing with Indiana and potentially beating Indiana.
But wouldn't that be the argument, John, for not expanding the tournament?
And especially if you are an Oregon fan who is looking at that matchup, you have to go, look, did Oregon play its best game against Indiana at Autzen Stadium earlier in the season? Or did, and I've wondered this all season long, did Oregon think at the time that it was simply lined up to, get the 5 seed, gonna keep it vanilla? And I don't want to, you can get into that argument, or should you expand the field, should you not? Notre Dame's sitting at home right now, Steven. They think you should expand the field. Let's go to Mark in Portland. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? I was first going to say that the BCS was a lot deeper than the SEC, because remember 2004 Auburn, they got shafted. Oklahoma and the Big 12 had something on the original BCS, but it all came down to that, you know, the original figure skating committee, the eight computers, the men behind, you know, behind the curtains. It was the human element that was that created the Miami Nebraska 2002 yep. Rose Bowl for the national title.
I covered that game. That was a joke.
Yeah, they rigged the game. They staged the game. And John, whenever you want to see the evidence, I've probably saved all the stuff that I did researching that, because I got so mad at what happened. But we got to do in college football, it's way better system now, because like the Oregon Ducks did this year, you got to tell your kids, you got to do everything you can to avoid the figure skating committee, to not leave your fate in the hands of the figure skating committee. And Oregon did that, because if they'd have lost to Washington or USC, they would have been in jeopardy of this happening to them. What happened to Notre Dame, I don't care if you think, you know, they beat them the first game of the year. They told them from the beginning that they were in this tournament. We all thought they were clearly in the tournament. They gave us every reason they could. They look better, you know, with the eye. They're dominating every game. They haven't lost since those first two games against ranked teams, and they've won every game convincingly. You saw the odds in Vegas, John. As an Oregon fan, I would definitely fear Notre Dame a lot more than Miami today. I mean,
yeah.
They're just a solid football team.
Well, Vegas agrees. Vegas had Notre Dame at 9-1. Had, you know, it now has Alabama sitting there at 20-1, and Miami at 22-1.
Here's what I think would work is play-in games. The conference championship games do not mean squat, but people don't think that right yet, but they should, because what does it mean that Oregon won the Big Ten championship last year? It doesn't mean anything to me, to be honest with you. It doesn't mean much. And it's basically like New England playing Denver the last game of the regular season. That was Indiana and Ohio State. I'm telling you today, in Ohio State's, you know, practice, they have already forgotten about what happened in the Big Ten title game. They're focused on winning a national championship. Does anybody care that they lost to Michigan last year? No. So let's have play-in games. We could have had Notre Dame playing Vanderbilt for a spot. But you pick the top 12 teams, like you said, you want to do 16. Instead of 16, let's do 20. Let's have four play-in games. You know, through from December 6th to December 13th, there's plenty of time, John, to do that.
Yeah.
You could have play-in games for the James Madison Tulane type of teams where there's four teams that get a shot. Boise State might have made it, or Arizona this year.
Yeah,
I just think the more teams we involve and give them a chance, and the more we take it out of the committee's hands, the better off it's going to be for the rest
of
us. What happened to Notre Dame shouldn't happen to anybody.
It shouldn't happen. It's not that, you know, and we're watching these conference championship games that are not, essentially meaningless, get played. But, you know, one of the thoughts I had in watching the conference championship games is I'm not watching the teams that should be playing play. I shouldn't have been watching Duke and Virginia play. I frankly shouldn't have been watching Georgia have to play another game. Georgia should already know, hey, we're in the tournament. We've done the work in the regular season. Ohio State and Indiana, they're in. I didn't need to see them play that game. What I needed to see was I needed to see Notre Dame play Alabama. I needed to see BYU play. Like, give me BYU in a game against, Miami as a play-in game. And I do think the future of championship weekend, could possibly be about the TV networks going, look, let's just turn these into play-in games and have, you know, number 8 through number 14 play off, and we'll play those games and then let the committee decide. And to Steven's point, Steven's saying, like, isn't it an argument? Steven, what was your argument? Like, isn't that an argument that there are only, like, 4 or 5 teams that could win it, that it should be smaller? No! What if you did that with the NCAA tournament? You'd never get Butler in the Final Four. You'd never get James Madison in the Final Four. You have to cast a really wide net and reward all the teams that do the work in the regular season. But I get what you're saying. There is a small group of teams that we both think can win this thing.
No, I agree with you. I was playing devil's advocate of that one because I think you're right. If anything, we should expand to 16, but the argument would be, look, there's really only 4 teams in this tournament, maybe 5 if you throw Oregon and Texas Tech in there, that have a chance to win the national title. Like, Oklahoma's not winning the national championship. Miami's not going to win the national championship. They're just not going to do it. I look at this field and I'm thinking, well, there's really only a couple teams that are going to have a chance to win this tournament. So why not just do an 8-team tournament? Why not just keep it at 4, where you actually have, you know, 3 compelling games rather than have all these first-round matchups? Like, I mean, do you care about the Alabama-Oklahoma game, John? Like, I know I will. I'm going to bet.
I kind of do now because I want to see Oklahoma beat the pants off Alabama. All right, well, anybody with me? Miami, can I get an amen?
Miami and Texas A&M. Like, they're going to run into Ohio State in the quarterfinals. We both think they probably have no chance in that game. Like, does that game really matter that much? I don't know that it does.
I'm all about rewarding teams. And look, just to apply the same logic to the NCAA tournament, this last year in the Final Four, we had all 1 seeds, okay? It was a really unusual year. But in 2024, you had North Carolina State as an 11 seed. In 2023, the year before, you had Florida Atlantic as a 9 seed. Year before that, you had North Carolina, who got in as an 8 seed. Year before that, it was UCLA as an 11 seed. So I do think you have to cast the net. I do think it, you know, James Madison's not going to beat Oregon. And you're not going to see Tulane beat Ole Miss unless Ole Miss just doesn't show up because of the coaching change with Lane Kiffin. But they beat Tulane badly earlier this season. But I do think a day is coming, well, maybe when you get to 16, where you see some 12s and some 13s and some 14s in games and playing with teams that they shouldn't be playing with. Let's go to the phone lines. Roy is in Portland. Roy, Georgia's one of those teams I think can win it. What do you think?
Yeah, John. You see, man, I got a lot to say, man. You know, we the only team in the SEC that always earn our way into the playoffs. We got to play everybody there. We got to win the SEC championship. We don't get no breaks like Alabama. There is no way Alabama should be in the playoffs. No way. And I'm not a big SEC. I'm a Georgia fan. I don't like any other team in the SEC. I want them all to lose. I don't want to see Alabama does not belong in the playoffs. You cannot get blown out by Florida State and then get boat raced in the SEC championship game. You didn't look good against Auburn. You didn't look good against LSU, in my opinion. And you somehow still in the playoffs. Man, it's rigged. You can't have 12 spots and have SEC teams having 5 of them. I'm saying, man, that's just not fair, man. That's just not fair because Georgia's the only one that works for us. We're the only one that works to get there. In 2023, we was the number one team, John. And we lost in the playoffs. And what did they do? I mean, we lost in the SEC championship game to Alabama. We was the number one team, remember? They knocked us out. We had to go to the Sugar Bowl. We dropped to number 6 from number 1. So this whole thing about all the conference games, the championship games don't matter. It matters when we play in it and we lose, but Georgia does. But somehow it don't matter when Alabama lose. Alabama is the only 3-loss team to get. I mean, it's an Alabama bias. That's what it is, in my opinion.
That's interesting.
Oklahoma doesn't belong in the playoffs.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Oklahoma does not belong in the playoffs. I'm sorry.
Let me ask you this. As a diehard SEC fan, you think this is more about Alabama getting favorable treatment than the SEC getting favorable treatment?
I think it's more about Alabama getting favorable treatment. It's some people that can't get it through their mind that Alabama cannot stay out the playoffs. I mean, they do this every single year. Well, what about Alabama? What about Alabama? What about Alabama? What about Alabama? Every year, John. Every year. I don't care what Alabama record you got. What about Alabama? What about – I'm tired of hearing it. I'm tired of hearing it, John. I'm telling you, 2023, we were the number one team in the nation. We got beaten the SEC championship game by Alabama. We went from number 1 to number 6, and we played in the Sugar Bowl. Nobody was like, oh, well, Georgia should be – and we could have won a national championship that year. We just had a slip-up. in a national championship game, in an SEC championship game. And John, I don't want to see Oregon. Those are two wasted spaces. Come on, I don't want to see Oregon against James Madison. Come on, that's not – James Madison doesn't belong in a playoff, neither does Tulane. Notre Dame should be in the playoff. Miami should be in the playoffs, okay? The part of the problem is the preseason rankings, John. You go into the season with these teams, so at the end of the season they talk about strength of schedule. Because when you go into the season having not played anybody and you got these teams ranked highly, look at this year, John. Texas and Penn State was at number one and two seeds. Wasn't they? They're not even nowhere near the playoffs. We cannot have these preseason. The first rankings need to come out after the fourth game of the season, because that influences people throughout the those preseason rankings influences people throughout the entire season. That some of these teams are better than what they are. It should be only three teams from the SEC: Georgia, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M. That's it. That's the only team. That was arguing. It was people arguing about Texas should be in there. That's how
I know. Look, in the end, I think we're going to find out Georgia's the only team that has a chance. And yet Georgia sitting down there playing Ohio State on that bracket of death on the bottom side of the bracket. 503-417-7575. I want your phone calls. You got the bald-faced truth.
Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Roy was all kinds of fired up. I want your calls as well. 503-417-7575. I don't mind that people are angry. I don't mind that they're frustrated. I don't mind that they are locked in. I don't mind that they're going to root against Alabama or the SEC. I think you have to look at this bracket and you have to ask yourself, what does a perfect bracket look like? I mean, the NCAA tournament selection committee has its problems as well. But there were some glaring ones, and I think they need to be fixed. Let's go to the phone lines. James is in Portland. I want to get a bunch of people on today. James in Portland, go ahead.
Hi, guys. You definitely addressed a lot of my ideas around playing games and even the 16-game idea. I was thinking this weekend, I'm like, had they set a deadline for maybe the previous ranking reveal, perhaps they could have had some teams listed as ties, and then depending on the outcome of a conference champion weekend, they could have had those play-in games set up. So what if Miami and Notre Dame were listed as tied in the top, 12 or 14? And then similarly, I was thinking about this consternation around the SEC. No one seems to be upset that Oklahoma is in over Notre Dame, and I'm not, I'm obviously not on the committee, and I don't know how to evaluate the strength of schedule as well, but I was just looking it over before I called in, and it seems like Notre Dame's final run is at least equivalent, to what Oklahoma was doing, but maybe Oklahoma had better wins. I'm not sure. But if it's an SEC thing, I would argue that we should be frustrated about Oklahoma's position compared to Notre Dame as well.
Yeah, I think there are a number of problems. I think the committee went into Saturday's games going, okay, if we have to make a choice between Notre Dame and Miami, we have to consider the head-to-head result. The problem was, all along, they put Notre Dame in the bracket and then decided only later Notre Dame was idle, Miami was idle, nobody played Saturday, and the committee flip-flopped them. And so the only thing I can surmise is that the committee didn't like the way that Notre Dame was sitting on the sofa. Bad posture. Let's get them out of the bracket. Steven, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, it is peculiar how Alabama is the only team ever to lose a conference championship game and not move down in the rankings.
Right. BYU got beat by Texas Tech, and they dropped a spot.
To Georgia's point, or Roy's point a couple of years ago, Georgia fell from 1-6 when they lose. Alabama had minus three yards rushing. And then the game before against Auburn, they got outgained by 130 yards, yet they don't even move down after getting just crushed in the SEC title game. It is a little weird.
I think that you're going to see a lot of people rooting against Alabama, a lot of people rooting against the SEC, and somehow you have this empathy for Notre Dame, which is normally a villain. Let's go to Charlie in Vancouver. Charlie, go ahead.
Hey, John. I don't like the idea of making the tournament smaller, because you've got to have David be in the tournament to have David versus Goliath. There's no Hickory High School if the 1As aren't playing the 4As. There's no, Villanova winning a national championship if the 32nd seed best team can't get in to play the number one seed. We got to keep it that way. And people can say there's no way they'll win. There's no way they'll win. Yeah, there are. That football is not round. It's oblong. It bounces weird ways. Weather can play a part. That's why I hate seeing all the games in the domes and all that kind of crap. But for your, in the second point, please, you've been beating on it for years. So have I. Get rid of the conference tournament. Why would Indiana or Ohio State wanted to have played that game yesterday? To see their quarterback go down and then maybe not get the seed that they would have gotten? I mean, it's just a joke. Alabama getting in, yeah, it's a joke. I just can't figure out some of the logic. But let's not make it smaller. Let's make it bigger, if anything, and eliminate the conference tournament.
You want those conference championship games gone? Problem is, TV's already paid for them. And so they're not going to let them go away without getting something in return. I think you give them play-in games instead of conference championship games. Let's go to Chris, who's in Portland. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hey, John, thanks for having me.
You bet.
2 points. One thing, I think it would be a horrible idea to expand the football playoff. And for the main reason, if you went for like a 1 to 16 seed, what if starting quarterback got hurt in a meaningless game, right, and they still beat the team by 24, 40 points, whatever? I think that that additional game is not really worthy. The second point would be comparing basketball hoops to football is not a really fair comparison. When you look at, you know, everybody loves March Madness. You got 5-on-5, right? You can have two studs on your team or a team that's well-coached with a bunch of seniors that can handle some freshman five that are just amazing athletes but don't have the team, experience to actually make a run.
I would offer, look, Oregon is a, 21.5-point favorite. At least that's how it opened against James Madison. You know, UCLA in week six was a 24.5-point underdog against Penn State. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying we got to play the game. I'll lean into this. Part of what I love about sport is that I'm watching human performance. It's not to me that much different than watching a play on Broadway or watching a great speaker speak. When you're watching an athlete perform, you're seeing somebody struggle with their own limitations, right? Everyone's in a battle with their limitations. I'm in a battle with those limitations right now. But one of the beautiful things about sport is when you watch two teams on the field settling something. Who's better? What's the score? And by how much? And if you played it 10 times, who would win it more often than not? But guess what? We're only playing it once. Who's going to win today? And it's how you get a Game 7 performance, you know, like the Dodgers getting a Game 7, you know, bang, bang, play at the plate. You know, you play that thing 20 times, and what happens with that runner on third base? It's just one of the beautiful things about sport is you gotta let it be played out. I understand that your favorites will more often than not win in football and that it's different than basketball. I still think you have to acknowledge that if you remove the group of five teams from the bracket, you're going to get an antitrust lawsuit. There's no way around it. It was the concession that the Power Four made in saying we'll give access to the playoff by allowing the five highest ranked conference champions to make the field. They avoided an antitrust lawsuit. If you try to knock James Madison and Tulane out of this bracket, you're going to get sued into oblivion and you're not going to have a tournament. And so I do think you have to cast the net wide enough to capture everyone. And you have to cast the net in a way that says, what are we actually doing here? We're trying to crown a champion. Sure, that's the primary objective. But the second thing is, we're trying to make sure we capture everybody who has a shot to win this thing. And right now, with this 12-team format as it is, we left a team out that Vegas said had a 9-to-1 shot to win it all. Notre Dame was one of those teams that I thought, you know what? They got the right matchups. They could win the thing. And they're out of the tournament. And I also think you have to acknowledge that the other reason you're playing the tournament is you're giving purpose to the regular season. And there is a purpose to James Madison's regular season and a purpose to Tulane's regular season that gets met with allowing them into the playoff. And they're going to be happy to come. I saw on social media a bunch of James Madison fans are traveling to Eugene, somewhere they'd never before imagined they would go because they want to see their team play the Ducks at Autzen Stadium. That's part of the beauty of a tournament, and I think we're going to get to see that play out. Let's go to Steve, who's in Canby. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, I wasn't aware of the antitrust element that you just explained. And that's too bad, because they're trying to make the football playoffs into the basketball playoffs, and they're two very dramatically different playoffs. You can get five players on a team and have an upset. There is no way James Madison or Tulane win a game in the playoffs. It just, no way, isn't going to happen. And it's too bad. This isn't basketball, it's football. So,
no, that 16 seed's not going to win the NCAA tournament. Steve, why do we let them in? Why do we let them into the tournament if we know they're not going to win it? Well, it's part of what a tournament really is. And I go and I see youth sports tournaments all the time, and I go, this team has no shot to win this tournament. They're not going to win a game, let alone get a point. We still play the thing out. We let these teams play the thing out. I'm good with the G5, G6 teams being in it. I don't want more, but frankly, there are only two in the tournament because the ACC was so bad. Go be better. If you're the ACC and you want to have Virginia in this tournament, you got to go and you got to be better. Steven, what is the biggest problem in the bracket? And I want to put that out to listeners as well. We're going to solve a problem. What is the biggest problem that we need to solve in the bracket? Steven, go ahead.
Okay, well, so I think the ACC is the biggest problem right now. Is they need to rework the wording where it's just the top power four teams who win their conference get in. Like, that's where they went wrong, is that they went with the top five conference champions. They get in, because that's where they went wrong, because Duke's not ranked. And so it would have worked out perfectly. If Virginia won, there wouldn't be as much uproar, and James Madison would be out. We'd have ACC, Miami's out. You could put Notre Dame back in there. But the ACC really blew it. I think they need to reword it so it's just the power four, your conference champion gets in, and the ACC needs to fix their tiebreakers so they can basically put who they want.
Yeah, what they should have had is Miami playing Virginia, right?
It should have been Miami, Virginia. So it's those two things right now are the biggest problem. But I'm with you. I think the bye weeks are also a problem right now. Like,
Get rid of them.
Because I don't know that fans want them, and we're going to find out, because the four best teams have byes, or so it seems this year. Last year, it didn't work out. Arizona State, Boise State, they had a bye. We knew they weren't top four teams. This year's the top four teams in the nation. If they blow it and they start losing in the quarterfinals because of the bye week, we really got to fix that thing.
I think, too, last year I looked at the teams that had the byes. They just did not play well. Coming up, our Big Splash pushed more of your phone calls, and our Big Splash is going to have Barry Bonds all kinds of mad. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. I want your take. What do you fix? What do you want to fix about this college football playoff?
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
More of your phone calls, 503-417-7575. I want you to weigh in on the CFP bracket. What's the problem? And by the problem, I mean the first thing you'd lead with in telling a friend, what's the problem with the bracket? I also want to do the Big Splash here, and then we're going to take a bunch of phone calls. Hour two will be a lot of phone calls, a whole bunch of talk about the bracket itself, Oregon's plan in how different are they approaching this playoff versus maybe last year when they were 13-0 in the one seed. I cast my Heisman Trophy ballot over the weekend. Got to be honest with you. I checked in with Dan Lanning. I bounced my ballot off Lanning just to see what he was going to say about it. I'll tell you what he told me in hour two coming up. All right, let's do it. Let's do the Big Splash, and then we'll get back to the phone calls.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be
the Big Splash.
Well, the Contemporary Baseball Hall of Fame Era Committee examined a number of candidates and decided that Jeff Kent, who holds the record for home runs by a second baseman, belongs in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. He was elected on Sunday. 57-year-old Kent, named on 14 of the 16 ballots. He gets in. You know who didn't get in? Barry Bonds, his former teammate in San Francisco. These two guys did not like each other. Bonds and Kent, both were prickly in their own way, but they were like fire and water, so to speak, in the locker room, and did not get along. Vinegar and oil? No, those go together. But they did not get along, and Bonds and Roger Clemens and Don Mattingly and Dale Murphy and Gary Sheffield, none of them got in, nor did Fernando Valenzuela. Bonds, Clemens, Sheffield, and Valenzuela were named on fewer than 5 ballots. You need 12 to get in. Kent got on 14. He gets in. Barry Bonds has to be really ticked about that. He did not like Jeff Kent. They did not, like I said, get along. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's talk about the CFP bracket. John's in Tigard. Go ahead, John.
So, John, be patient with me. I've got three things.
Go.
So the first one is, if Bama had not made it, which I don't think they should have, if Bama had not made it and then Notre Dame is in, that would mean that the SEC only had 4 teams, not 5, right?
Yes.
And then, so you have a little bit more balance. I don't have a problem with the 2 outsides, but I think the ACC screwed up by not having Miami in their playoffs. So if they fix that and Miami wins, then they make it in on their own. They're not knocking somebody else out of the way, right?
Right.
So, but the next question, though, is when the Pac-12 comes back into its place next year officially, what is the Pac-12 versus the Power Four or the Big Five?
Yeah, the Pac-12 will be like the American. It'll be like the Sun Belt. It'll be competing mostly for that fifth position. And there's a little bit of a tweak coming in. You know, unless the format changes and with an expansion, this certainly could change. But beginning next year, if Notre Dame is in the top 12 in the rankings, Notre Dame is automatically qualified. That was something they negotiated, not this year, but next year. So Notre Dame would be in next year if they were in the same predicament. But the Pac-12 will be competing against, you know, the other power conferences. And, you know, a Boise State team this year that didn't play all that well, that was a conference champion in the Mountain West, had 4 losses. You know, that Boise State team was not getting in, not over Tulane, not over James Madison. But the thinking is that that Pac-12 champion, more often than not, is going to have access to that spot in the playoff, whether it's the 11 seed or the 12 seed. And if the ACC doesn't get its act together and present a team that is a viable candidate, these group of 5 schools are going to continue to say, hey, we deserve to be in this tournament. And I think they're justified in saying that. See, this is not a group of 5 problem. This is an ACC problem. Why is it that the ACC doesn't have a candidate as its conference champion that looks like it belongs in the playoff? It has instead a Miami team that was not involved in the conference championship that is clearly its best team. Is that a problem for the group of 5? No, I think it's a problem in the ACC. You have to fix that if you're Jim Phillips of the ACC.
And especially this year when there wasn't a Boise State. Like last year, Boise State was really good, right? They were creeping towards the top 10. This year, the top team was Tulane. They were 20. Okay, well, you got to be the next best team, which is James Madison at what, 25? Like you just had to have a top 25 team win your conference tournament, and they didn't do it. Like that is it. This whole debacle is caused by the ACC. Had they done it correctly, the committee would be looking a lot more better right now and not facing a lot of questions.
Yeah, because if they do it right, you have Miami in the field, right?
Miami versus Virginia, winners in, and then James Madison's out.
And James Madison's out. And so Miami's in the field. And frankly, is Miami, you know, the 11 seed or the 12 seed? I mean, selfishly, I would have loved to see Oregon play Miami. I would love to see Mario Cristobal come to Autzen Stadium and Dan Lanning, Cristobal. I mean, it would just be a great week for us. Would have been great. Would have been amazing.
Well, and to that point, had Miami lost, then you have all the evidence you need to put them out of the tournament, right?
And
you put Notre Dame in. If Miami wins, you can still throw Notre Dame in the tournament because Miami's already in. Like, the ACC caused this entire debacle, and I said it last week, like, there's going to be chaos when Duke wins, and then Duke goes and wins this game.
Well, here's the other thing. That was a fun game, right? I enjoyed seeing. That was a great game. Went to overtime. Duke looked fun. But, you know, these were neutral site games, these conference championship games, SEC title game, ACC, Big 12, Big 10. They were supposed to be neutral site games. I'm using air quotes there because what happened? Indiana won in Indianapolis. What happened? Georgia won in Atlanta. What happened? Duke went down to Charlotte and won. Look, Texas Tech won in the state of Texas. Like, the team that had the home field advantage won all of those conference championship games. And so, yes, the ACC got this wrong. If the ACC simply would have put Miami in the game against Virginia, and there were five teams that were tied at 6-2, and it was a tiebreaker formula, it went to like, all right, you know, whose mother's maiden name alphabetically comes first, right? No, there was, you know, the real issue is when you have 16 teams or 18 teams in a conference, nobody plays anybody else. And it creates all these problems when it comes to tiebreakers. I think there needs to be a little bit of a human element involved in the tiebreaker because everybody in the ACC knew you needed to have Miami playing to play its way in.
It should just be your top two college football playoff ranked teams.
Yes.
Yeah, supposedly the committee's unbiased, so that would be the top two teams in your conference. And then it's
or that should be like, if they didn't play head-to-head, then you go to the rankings.
Right.
You know, so it should have been Virginia against Miami, and then settle it. The only other thing I can come up with was the idea that I floated earlier that, you know, instead of playing conference championship games, you have all these conferences give the games back to TV, and TV gets to go, all right, CFP committee, who do you want to see play? And if the CFP committee goes, yeah, we have a real problem because we don't know if Alabama or Miami is better, then that's the game you set. Like, you play Alabama against Miami. The committee would like to see Alabama play Miami. It's a neutral site game. And play that game instead of playing a conference championship game. I think there would be far greater interest. It would seem equitable. And the whole point of sport is supposed to be a level playing field. Let's level the playing field. Hour two is coming up. Stick around.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
The Heisman Trophy finalists are out. Heisman Trust releasing the finalists just a few minutes ago, 4 minutes ago. Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love is a finalist. Indiana quarterback Fernando Mendoza, finalist. Vanderbilt quarterback Diego Pavia, finalist. And Ohio State quarterback Julian Sayin, finalist. Those are the finalists. Winner will be announced during the Heisman ceremony coming up on Saturday, 4 o'clock on ABC. Who's going to win this thing? Is it Mendoza's trophy to lose? I'm not supposed to say who's on my ballot, but I'm going to say who's on my ballot without saying who's on my ballot. How about that? Pay attention. I put Diego Pavia really high on my list. I put Fernando Mendoza high on my list. I had a third person on my list that is not a finalist. And maybe it's because I'm casting a dissenting vote intentionally. I kind of think this award has got some problems. We're giving it away now to the quarterback generally on the highest-ranked team in the country. Last year, I think, was a little bit of a marketing thing. I don't think Travis Hunter was the best player. I thought Ashton Jeanty was the best player last year. I voted for Jeanty. This year, I went in a little different order. I'm not supposed to say this, but I'm just going to mention an order, and then you can draw conclusions. I thought Diego Pavia meant more to his team than anybody in the country. I thought he was the most valuable player. I think what he did at Vanderbilt was amazing. I think I wanted to recognize that. Secondarily, Fernando Mendoza, if we're including championship games, and we're supposed to, he had just a superior performance to Julian Sayin on Saturday in the Big Ten championship game. I was a little put off by the post-game interview, and I kind of wondered if Mendoza lost the Heisman in the post-game interview. Steven, did you see that?
I did, yeah. I pulled that, too. It is in sports audio. But
I'm going to play it, yeah.
Yeah, right after the game. He was a little out there, I'll say.
Let's just say if you wanted to vote for Fernando Mendoza and you saw this, you might think twice.
Congratulations, Indiana, the Big Ten champs. How does that sound?
It sounds so beautiful. I want to give all the glory to God. But by the glory of God, the great coaches, great teammates, everyone we have around us, we were able to pull this off. Whoever thought the Hoosiers would be here, but now the Hoosiers are
flipping champs. Let's go.
You guys call yourself a bunch of misfits who found the right home at Indiana. Why was this the right place for this group?
It's the right place for process oriented. We're going day by day, whether it's the offensive line, the defense, the coaches, special teams, we're all process oriented to one goal. That's our thing, is we're brothers. We can drag teams into the deep end because we know that we're gonna stick together and we're the strongest glue ever.
Tell me about finding Charlie Becker, third down, 2 minutes to go. We talk about Heisman moments, but take me through that one.
And what an incredible, Charlie's been, but he's been every single day in summer. We were always throwing before practice, before at 7 a.m. on Sundays, doing spots, doing routes, and now you see it to come to fruition. He's my roommate. Couldn't be happy for such a young man as well as our defense playing lights out, and well, everybody just, what an incredible moment.
Congratulations. Enjoy it.
Thank you so much. God bless. Go Hoosiers.
There he is. I just think he was, do you think he was really that excited, or was he trying to boost himself a little bit? Because he had a very emotional, you might remember when he was at Cal, he had a very emotional post-game interview on the field at Cal in which he got a lot of love for breaking down and saying how much he loved his teammates. I kind of think he was trying to do that and manufacture kind of that emotion in this moment, but didn't really work out for him.
What's going on there? I'm going to see the positive side, John. I think it was real. It was a little corny. It was a little weird. My friend texted me, he's like, did you watch that? I'm like, yeah, that was kind of crazy. But I mean, he was happy. I mean, it's Indiana. They hadn't won since, the Big Ten title since, I don't even know when, but sliced bread around when they won. Like, I mean, they got to be excited about it. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I do wonder if that kind of stuff hurts his draft stock. Like his NFL draft stock.
I don't know. He can play. I mean, he can play.
He can, but like, if you're going to be a clown like that,
I think he's a little bit of a goober.
Right.
Is that a good way to put it?
Like, I don't think he's cool. Like, there's guys that are cool. He is not one of them.
And I don't mind that because some of these guys that are cool guys don't end up being good pros. Like, they're too worried about like their endorsement with their sunglasses company. But like, I kind of think when I heard him do that post game, I was like, he should have stayed at Cal. Like, he's a kid that's going to, he's a little bit of a goober. He's not cool, as you say. All right. So Mendoza, Pavia on my ballot, not in that order. And then my third spot, I went more regional. And I don't love Julian Sayin's game. I didn't think of the Big Ten championship game or any point of the season. He blew me away in a point where I went, all right, he is one of the top three players in America. So for me, it came down to either a Notre Dame running back or it came down to somebody else who I thought had an amazing season. And I got to be honest, I went more regional and I put a guy who will suit up at Autzen Stadium in that opening round on my ballot. So that was my third spot on my ballot. And I knew very well that people are going to go, oh, you're a homer. Oh, you're pandering to your region. I felt like Dante Moore had as good a season as anybody except Pavia or Mendoza. And Mendoza beat him head to head. I can't put him in front of that. But
is this one of the weaker Heisman classes that you can remember? Because it is for me. Like, it kind of goes back to the Troy Smith year when he won it all. He won the Heisman.
I mean, it's a lot of years that it's that way. I mean, and here's the other thing too, Steven, like, what are we doing here? The NFL GMs are going to tell us who the best player in America is. And there's some defensive tackle who's going to go like second or third in the draft that all the NFL scouts are going to be like, that was the best player in college football who's not a quarterback. This award has become so quarterback centric that you literally need to start the season by going, okay, who are the teams that can make the playoff field? Who are their quarterbacks? These are the finalists. And then what happens? All year long, ESPN and Fox tell us, these are the Heisman hopefuls. These are the people. These are the odds. I try to block all that out. I think it's a lot of propaganda. It's a lot of propaganda. Let's play some Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with Notre Dame Athletic Director Pete Bevacqua. He says that the ACC has done some damage to Notre Dame in the relationship with Notre Dame.
But we were mystified by the actions of the conference. to attack, you know, their biggest really business partner in football and a member of their conference in 24 of our other sports. And I would tell you, Dan, I wouldn't be honest with you if I didn't say that they have certainly done permanent damage to the relationship between the conference and Notre Dame.
Ouch. Ouch. Notre Dame saying, hey, look, we were looking for some cover here. And the ACC going, yeah, we provided some for Miami. Bavakwa went on to say he's confused with the selection process. Listen carefully.
Yeah, I want to make one thing clear, Dan. We have no problems with the teams that made it in. They're all great teams. You know, Miami's a great team. Alabama's a great team. Texas, Vanderbilt, we're a great team. What we're so confused by and frustrated with is the process. You know, every step along the way since the first CFP rankings came out, we were led to believe we were in as long as we took care of business. And we certainly took care of business with this 10-game winning streak. Dan, you think about that first ranking, you know, we in Miami were both 6-2. They had obviously already beat us the first game of the year. They were 18th. We were 10th. You know, the only thing that we did since that point was win every game by over an average of over 30 points. And, you know, all of a sudden we're 11th and on the outside looking in. And, you know, when we sit and talk, when I talk to Marcus, when we talk to our team, we don't have any good answers for that. So we're just really frustrated that we had the rug pulled out from underneath us.
I covered Notre Dame as a beat reporter in 1998, and Bob Davie was the coach. They weren't great at the time. But I'll tell you, there was something about the Notre Dame brand where you kind of understood Notre Dame stood on its own. I think it's really interesting that the committee essentially sent a message to Notre Dame going, you don't have cover here from a conference. And so we're not going to really back you because we need to go back Miami and we need to back Alabama. It was three teams, Miami, Alabama, and Notre Dame, for two spots. And again, Steven said it well last segment. The ACC created the problem by not putting Miami in the championship position in its conference. It left them as an at-large team, and Notre Dame paid the price on that bill. Meanwhile, Mario Cristobal says you can please some of the people some of the time.
It's a tough call. I mean, I know that every year so many people work at it, but at the end of each year, no one's really happy with the results. Mm-hmm. And I mean, unless something is settled on the field, it's left up to chance, opinion, controversy. So I'm not sure what the answer is. I know that the NFL model seems to have, we seem to like migrate, right? More and more each year towards different parts of the NFL model. And I know there's not enough calendar dates to be able to play an entire season like that. But like Coach Saban used to tell us all the time, man, if you want to make everybody happy, don't get into coaching football and football in general. Go sell ice cream. The ice cream man makes everybody happy. The football guys and the football gods, they just, at the end, not everybody can be happy.
Yeah, not everybody can be happy. Go sell ice cream if you want to make everybody happy. I am left thinking about the Notre Dame fans, and frankly, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you've had a lot of good times. You're going to get a lot of empathy out of this. I don't know if that's worth anything to you. I do think it's kind of petty, though, for Notre Dame to go, we're not going to play in the bowl season since we didn't get to play in the playoff. We belong in the playoff. I think that's petty. I understand why they're doing it, but it is petty. Meanwhile, Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State, he thinks that college football is a mess, except the money.
We've created a mess. Point blank. The whole industry is a mess, right? The only thing that's not a mess is the dollar signs. Those are still pointing up. Everything else is a mess. The dollar sign, the business of it, that's skyrocketing. Everything else a mess. That's just being transparent and honest. There's not, other than the ratings, the dollars, the money involved, it's a mess. So this is just another piece of the mess.
There it is, piece of the mess. College football needs to get it together. Will they get it together on their own, or will they need help from lawmakers who are eager to intervene? We will see. Meanwhile, Jeff Schwartz, frequent guest on this show, he says, just give me a consistent viewpoint.
If you have Notre Dame ahead of Miami for 7 weeks in a row, they don't play in the last weekend, and you jump Miami ahead of Notre Dame, even though the result might have been the correct result in the end, The process is terrible, Bear. Finally here, too. They have punished every team who has lost the conference championship game over the last three seasons by dropping them in the rankings, except Alabama. Call that fair, call it unfair, whatever you want to do. They have dropped every team who has lost in the conference championship game down a spot. The fact is they moved everyone else down for the last 3 years, except Alabama, who did not score for five straight quarters against Georgia. Two from the previous game, Sammy, and three in this game. So I get it. You don't want to punish teams for losing conference championship. They made that precedent very clear, except they have. They have punished teams in the past by dropping them in the rankings.
Look, they have punished teams in the past. They just didn't punish Alabama, who, by the way, you want to say, okay, early season defeats by Notre Dame. Notre Dame lost two games before September 15th. Didn't lose again. Had a freshman quarterback. By the way, their two losses were 1 point to Texas A&M and 3 points to Miami. Didn't lose again. And then, you know, the committee might say, well, they lost those games in the early part of the season. And they really counted. How about Alabama losing to Florida State in the early part of the season?
I feel
season?
Like that's the part that no one's talked about. Is everyone, because, you know, a couple weeks ago, it was Texas. Is Texas going to get it? Well, they lost to Florida, who was 5-7 or 4-8. Alabama lost to Florida State, who's 5-7 as well. And they lost by two touchdowns. That game was not close. Yet we all didn't really talk about it. Like, Alabama's resume isn't great, and they have a bad loss. I don't understand why they get so much love. It has to be just an Alabama thing.
Alabama or the SEC, we'll find out. Meanwhile, J.D. Pickell saying what I said in the opening segment, the Oregon Ducks got it great.
Path in the college football playoff is a funny thing. We kind of withhold judgment on this side of things when it comes to trying to project and predict exactly where specific teams are going to be at the end of the college football season relative to national title aspirations, because a lot of times it depends on your draw. If you play Boise State and SMU, it's a much more favorable draw than playing, Notre Dame and Alabama, your first round of the, or the first two rounds of the college football playoff. When you zoom out, look at Oregon's draw, I think it's fair to make the case they have the most workable path in the college football playoff with where the Ducks sit in that number five spot.
There it is, most favorable path, sitting there as a five seed. They have James Madison in the opening round. Dan Lanning with some thoughts on James Madison.
We're obviously really excited about this opportunity to face James Madison in a playoff game here at Autzen Stadium. I think our fans are going to be unbelievable. This will be a unique atmosphere that doesn't exist, you know, in the last 20 years, and now you get the opportunity to experience it now. I know our players are excited to play this team. Just really getting started, hopping in and evaluating these guys. Been able to watch them a little bit this afternoon. Obviously, they got a really talented team. Coach Chesney's done a really good job with these guys. They've been really successful in several games. You know, just looking through it this morning, I think they've had nine games where they rushed forward 200 yards, and that's a common component for them and their success. Played really good defense and really good special teams, so excited about the opportunity.
Look, James Madison, highly distracted. Their coach, Bob Chesney, will be taking over at UCLA. I think James Madison's got a real feel of happy to be here around it. I don't think Oregon's going to have any problems with James Madison. But Bob Chesney said, you know, it was magical watching the ACC title game. James Madison needed Duke to beat Virginia to get into the bracket.
Oh, man, it was the last week. Like, you know, the amount of emotions, you know, that I think we've all been through over these past 7 days has been extreme. And, you know, the night before was a late one. Last night was certainly a late one. And I guess we'll be able to get on this film and figure it out. But we're all watching. We're all huge fans of Duke. And, you know, what a win for them.
What a win for Duke. What a win for James Madison. I think it'll be fun to see James Madison at Oregon in the bracket. Looking forward to Texas Tech and Oregon in the quarterfinal, should the Ducks get there. Danny Cannell is wondering what consequences there will be. Notre Dame got left out. Hell hath no fury like the Irish scorned.
And I remember when I saw Jim Phillips out there campaigning for Miami, I was genuinely wondering, I wonder how Notre Dame feels about this. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, screw you guys. You guys have the best of both worlds by being mm-hmm. in our conference, like and getting the best of utilizing our resources and our teams to schedule and beat up against easy wins for you, and then go ahead and waltz into the playoff and take all the money to yourself. So I understood that aspect. But I do, Notre Dame being left out, I think is going to have, there's going to be a lot of consequences from the decisions that were made yesterday and the way the format is with two group of five. But I think Notre Dame being on the outside maybe has the most significant, you know, like immediate action that's taken. We already saw them opt out of the bowl, as you mentioned. Like, that was a big deal. But I do wonder what this means moving forward and what sort of it could spark. And is there a break off even more with the ACC?
I think there will be a break off even more. You heard Pete Bavakwa say that there was irreparable damage done to the relationship between Notre Dame and the ACC. If I'm Notre Dame, I'm looking over at the Big Ten going, does that make more sense for me? Should I just play an independent schedule? Do I have to negotiate my own way even harder with the CFP to make sure I'm included? There's a lot of questions here.
John, am I crazy to feel this way? Like, I feel no sympathy for Notre Dame. Like, they are pouting. They are saying, I'm taking my ball, I'm going home. I'm not going to compete. Like, I don't want to compete anymore. We didn't get what we want, and so we're going home. And now we're going to break away from the conference who has helped you out when, you know, they needed these games. They need these games against ACC schools. Like, you just, to me, they've come across and they've come out and just said, look, we're going to pout our way to get to the College Football Playoff. And now they're going to get it because they just changed the rules where if you're top 12 and you're Notre Dame, you're automatically in. And it worked. It's just like dealing with a little child, and I hated it. And I actually don't feel bad for them at all. Like, go win a game and not complain about this.
Well, I think we would say that about a lot of the have programs in college football. And we would say that about Alabama if Alabama got the same raw deal. But I think the difference here is that Alabama had the SEC, you know, advocating on behalf of itself, and it's why Alabama is not in a bad position. I think if you are a Notre Dame fan, you're going, wait a minute, our alliance with the ACC, not only did it not help us, it harmed us. And I think that becomes, to me, the difference.
Do you think the ACC advocating for Miami really influenced the committee at all?
I think it does. It's not a good look. I mean, what did they do? They
posted a couple of social media things. Like, I just don't think that matters.
But on the ACC network, what game were they replaying over and over?
It was the Notre Dame-Miami game from week
one. Notre Dame-Miami.
Not Duke of Virginia. It was replaying that.
Yeah, they were basically, you know, letting everybody know that Miami won that head-to-head matchup. And there's money in it for the ACC. The ACC gets the money for Miami participating. So I get it. I get why the ACC was going, wait, we'd rather have the Hurricanes in than Notre Dame, because Notre Dame's just going to keep the money for itself. I just think this is one of these times. It's great for Notre Dame to not have to belong to a conference and to think it has access to the playoff every year. But the committee essentially said, you don't have the cover provided by a conference, a power conference, and you don't have the cover of the SEC, and you don't have the cover of the ACC. You're out in the cold, and that's where they left them. We got a whole bunch more to talk about. Plus, coming up, I got to address the comments by Scott Ruick last week, Oregon State women's basketball coach. He went after the Civil War a little bit, and I don't blame him for doing it. Plus, we have the 5 at 5 coming up top of the hour. Leave it here. BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
You know where to find me. 3 to 6 p.m. right here on your radio dial. You can also find me on social media, on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT. You can find me on the gram. I'm on Instagram and TikTok, just under my name, John Canzano. You can find me on YouTube, where I'm posting an occasional video. If I ever go missing, that's where you know where to go looking for me. Yeah, I'm not difficult to find. This won't be one of those unsolved mysteries. Do you remember that show, Unsolved Mysteries? Do you remember like how mysterious that was? Man, that Unsolved Mysteries show, and I kind of think my entire childhood was about trying to trying to scare you. Unsolved Mysteries, and it was one of these shows that you know, you'd watch it and then you were fearful of everything. It kind of raised your anxiety level in general. And it was the guy's voice from Unsolved Mysteries. Do you remember that guy? You know?
Yeah, Steve? They had the creepy kind of music too.
Yeah. I used to have, I thought I had the music for it, and I searched for Unsolved Mysteries in my file, but I couldn't find it. I know, remember too, the Crime Stoppers? Remember Henry Gripper? Used to do the Crime Stoppers guy? Do you remember that?
No.
You don't remember Crime Stoppers? Oh. No. But it was the, you know, the guy that, did like, if there was a crime in the Portland metropolitan area, you would turn on TV and you would turn on radio and you'd always hear Henry Gripper. Let me just play his voice, because I had him in studio and we had him do a couple of liners.
This is Officer Henry Gripper. In the evenings of Wednesday, November 28th, and Thursday, November 29th, 2012, several statues at the Grotto, 8719 Northeast Beach Street, were vandalized, including three statues where the heads were removed and carried away.
Okay, you remember that? Does that ring a bell for you?
His voice? A little bit, yeah, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. You don't watch a movie. You don't go out to a restaurant. You don't, like, Steven, come on. Henry Gripper? No,
I mean I've heard of the Crime Stoppers. I don't remember anything about
his
it.
Voice,
I've heard the words.
I think people need to be listening to Henry Gripper's voice and being like, man, that it will ring a bell for most people. Well, I had Henry do the Grinch, read the Grinch on air once in studio because it was right before Christmas time. Maybe we can do that coming up to Christmas. But I had him do this.
It was Christmas. It's practically here. Then he growled, with his Grinch fingers nervously drumming, I must find a way to keep Christmas from coming.
There was the Grinch. We had Henry come in studio and do that. We had him also do some liners for the show. Tell him, listen to the bald-faced truth. And people scaring people into it. But I did think there was a whole piece of my childhood where even the movies were scary. The movie Jaws came out when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And I don't know what my parents were thinking. They took me to the movie theater to see Jaws in person. I remember I was at the Century 21 movie theater in San Jose, California. And the movies today, they're in real trouble. And I would encourage people, go out and see a movie at your local movie theater. The movies are in trouble. Like, attendance and viewership at the actual theater is down. Why? Because people are binge-watching everything and watching on their laptops or watching on their phones or watching on their television in their cushy living room. But there's something about getting into the movie theater and watching a full-length feature film that like $200 million has been spent on to produce. There's something about that for me that moves the needle. And it's not just the popcorn, but the popcorn's part of it. And the soda that I would never get otherwise get, but because I'm at the movie, I'm going to overpay for this popcorn and the soda. I do think people should get out to the movies and see more movies. And I can remember, when I first started hosting this radio show, a lot of Blazer fans, and Steven, I don't know if you relate to this, Blazer fans used to go to movie theaters to watch the team on sort of the closed circuit, pay-per-view, you know, movie theater screen and watch the Blazers play basketball. Now, I know the challenges for Blazers fans in more recent years have been, do I watch it on my Xbox? Do I watch it on, you know, how do I watch it on my laptop? Do I watch it? Have you found that since the Blazers went back to kind of this Blazer Vision thing where you could get the games and stream the games, have you found them more accessible, Steven, like for your family? Can you watch the Blazers whenever you want?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm home, I can watch the Blazer game whenever I want to just with the antenna now. And I think it is great because, you know, they're playing 82 games and pretty much every single game that I believe, except for they've had one that was on NBC and Peacock, that was the only one that they could not have on Blazer Vision. Like, that one is exclusively national. But if it's a non-national TV game, you can find it if you are at your house or at my house. So I think it's way more accessible, way better that way. Because it was so hard for a while. Like, you had to, you know, maybe illegally stream them if you have to. And, like, I'm covering the team. And so it's like, I got to watch them somehow. Yeah. And, how am I going to do it?
You need to watch this team play. I felt like, you know, I can remember I had Blazers executives who came into the show and they were mad at me. And they were mad at me because I wouldn't shut up about what a bad deal their TV deal was. It wasn't a bad deal financially for them, but it was a bad deal for fans. And I can remember, you know, I went down to Salem to the state capitol and I gave testimony in front of the lawmakers saying, like, who's looking out for the consumer? And then, you know, the Blazers lobbyists, the Blazers had some lobbyists there from Comcast who were sitting in there and they gave testimony too. And I was like, who are these guys from Philadelphia? I'm just advocating, like, I don't really care for me, but I'm advocating for, like, little kids in the Portland metropolitan area and families who are going, I can't see my team play. And I felt forever, and I told the Blazers, and I warned the Blazers about this. I said, yes, you're getting $120 million or whatever they sold out their rights for. But I said, your long-term risk is there are a lot of kids who are not going to be able to see your games. And I don't know, like, the impact of that over 15 or 20 years, what that has. And I can tell you what the impact is. I think if you have a kid right now in your household who is between the ages of, you know, 7 and 15, that there's a high likelihood that unless the parent has worked really hard to make the Blazers games accessible, that they don't have the bond that kids of maybe the generation or two before, or maybe from your childhood, Stephen, the parents that were, you know, you could flip on over-the-air TV and watch the game. That is back. But, you know, the Blazers didn't like me because why? Because I kept coming on the radio and going, hey, the fans are getting held hostage. And we even came up with a benchmark.
This is a bold-faced truth. News alert. Blazers fans held hostage.
Day 7,212. The impasse between Comcast Sportsnet Northwest and the Trail Blazers continues. Steve Patterson, Blazers president, had this to say when I asked him about accessibility for his team. That's what he had to say. Nothing. The Blazers got mad. They said, oh, you're out to get them. They were spitting mad. I can remember Sandy Rowe, the publisher of the Oregonian at the time, saying that Steve Patterson came in. He was literally spraying his saliva all over her office. He was so mad at me. Pulled all his advertising out of the paper. Those were the good old days. Pulled all of his advertising out of the newspaper that used to be delivered. You know?
I love that. How does that feel to know that you can control someone's feelings like that?
I don't know.
And you didn't even try to. Like, you're not trying to hurt his feelings.
Here's the other thing, like, about Patterson, and people know this. I think I could say this. He wasn't a great guy. He wasn't a good guy. And he accused me numerous times of being out to get him. Like, I could care. I would even care what Steve Patterson had to say. Like, I was in a news conference one time, and Patterson had this teleprompter in the news conference, and I was like, why does he have a teleprompter? There's like four people in the room. And so I looked back while he was reading the prompter, and in parentheses, he had laugh. Like, he was supposed to laugh. Like, he had a reminder to himself, laugh after you say that sentence. And then he would say another line, and then in the parentheses, he had laugh harder. And so I started...
That can't be true.
It was true. And so... You know, he needed to laugh. And
that
so,
should have been Oregon State with Trent Bray. That should have worked on him.
Laugh and then laugh harder. And I put it in my column. I wrote, you know, Steve Patterson, laugh here and then laugh harder. And he passed me in the hallway the next time I saw him at what is now Moda Center. And he said, well, you know, it feels personal. You're out to get me. And I said, Steve, if it was personal, it would be a lot worse than this. It would be way worse because I knew some things, right? And he kind of nodded at me like, okay. And he moved on. The only other people that I've ever had say that are like Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner. He, one time in the hallway in Louisville, Kentucky, in the arena there, I think it's KFC Arena where Louisville plays, he kind of elbowed me and he said, you know, why is this personal to you? And I was like, Steve, like Larry, like, this is not personal. Like, this is show business. Like, get caught doing the right thing. But the Blazers fans of that era, I really felt like two things happened. The team had real issues with winning consistently until, like, Damian Lillard came into the equation. And then the other thing was, I just think they lost connection with their fan base. And I think it's been great to see, like, younger Blazer fans suddenly wearing jerseys, being excited about the team. The team doesn't need to win a bunch of games, but for crying out loud, at least your kids recognize the players if they walked by them on the street because they have seen a game on TV and they know what Denny Avdija looks like.
And you hit the nail on the head because, like, when Damian Lillard got re-signed here in Portland, they had that little rally, and I took my oldest Lincoln, who's 11 years old. There weren't a ton of kids there. It was mostly, like, people that were in maybe their early 20s, like maybe just out of high school, like straight into college, or maybe, you know, they're not going to college or whatever, or people my age, like 38. There weren't a lot of kids. And so there are now more kids. Like when I go to my, you know, kids basketball games, like there's more kids wearing Blazer gear now where there wasn't for such a long time. And I do think a lot of it is because they can watch the games now that they're on TV. They can just say, hey, oh, it's, you know, they're playing the Warriors. Yeah, I want to watch Steph Curry, but hey, might as well just turn the Blazers on and watch that game as well. And then get into it a little bit. I think the Blazers have done a good job the last 2 years of making sure that they can be on 2.2.
Yeah. And I think if you're a Blazer fan, you really want to like your team and you want to connect with your team. You know, and I think it's one of the really good things that the University of Oregon has successfully done in the last couple of years. Like, people may look at the videos that Oregon does, those us, you know, Ducks versus them videos. Well, I think they're made for recruits and their families. I don't think they're really aimed at me. I don't think they're aimed at you. But they've done a nice job of personalizing the players in a way that I think Duck fans who are watching games on a regular basis kind of, they know the players a little bit. They know the personalities of the staff.
And that's hard to do with the portal now, because guys are leaving, but the, you know, the Duck fans do fall in love with these certain players.
And I think you kind of have a sense, like, do you really know Dante Moore? No. But you have a sense of who he is, maybe in a better way than Fernando Mendoza, who's, you know, looking like a goober in the post game. Like, you know, come on, you can't do that interview. You know, that's not cool. You know, I'm not going to pretend that I'm like the coolest guy around, but I looked at that and I was like, what is this? This guy might lose my Heisman vote if he keeps talking. Like, you just be quiet right now. But look, in the end, I think we've got to look at, you know, what these teams are doing to connect with their fan bases. And I think you have to appreciate what Oregon's doing. And if you're Oregon State, you got to get busy doing that too.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750, The Game.
My Monday mailbag at johncanzano.com is always a lot of fun. In some ways, it's not all that different from this radio show where you know, I involve callers and we take calls and we discuss ideas. And maybe that's why I like it so much. I used to not like the Monday mailbag back in the day when I was working at a newspaper because, again, it was very restrictive. Wanted me to stick to certain topics that move the needle. On my Monday mailbag now, I let it rip. Like, whatever you want to talk about, I want to talk about. And one of the questions that I got at the Monday mailbag was about Scott Ruick, the Oregon State women's basketball coach, who, by the way, I think is one of the best coaches in America. He is one of the best coaches, and certainly his Final Four success at Oregon State and the programs that he built to prominence at George Fox and then later Oregon State speak for themselves. He's just done a ridiculously good job of, I don't want to say doing more with less because that becomes cliche. Everybody's trying to do more with less. But what Ruick has done in building the foundation of great culture and players that play as a unit and the sum of the parts is greater, you know, the sum is greater than the parts. He has done that with his teams. And I think it's a remarkable story, probably one of the best success stories in the history of the state, with Scott Ruick taking a women's basketball program at Oregon State that came from nowhere after LaVonda Wagner, had nothing, bare cupboard, walk-on players, and ended up taking that team and that program several years later to a Final Four. It's just remarkable. But Ruick spitting some truth, I think, in the wake of his loss last week at Oregon in a Civil War game. Oregon State 6-4 on the season. And Scott Ruick basically said this is a game that he doesn't think Oregon State should be playing for now. And let's unpack that a little bit. First of all, the for now part I thought was interesting. And, you know, I have communicated with Ruick a little bit on this front. I've invited him on this radio show, and we'll see if he takes me up on the offer to come talk about it more. But I first of all, think there's not a program in America that got hurt more by expansion and realignment of conferences than Scott Ruick's program at Oregon State. They were positioned, when all of this went down with the Pac-12, to make another run at the Final Four. He had an Elite Eight type roster. He's competing at the highest level of the game, playing South Carolina in an Elite Eight appearance. And it was sniffing around breaking through again at Oregon State. And I have no doubt that it will be sweeter even more when Scott Ruick gets back to a Final Four after everything that he's been through. I mean, he was right there with a roster that included Reagan Beers right in the middle and a Tamia Gardner on the outside, great leadership, and a Talia Van Olhoffen who ended up at USC alongside Juju Watkins. And it was all right there. And Oregon State had those players in-house. And then suddenly it was a rebuild. And last year in winning the WCC tournament, I thought there was a lot of validation for Scott Ruick's program. It was just a remarkable thing to see him take that bad hand he got dealt and turn it into a berth into the NCAA tournament yet again. Great coaching job by Ruick. But, you know, look, there's bad feelings. There's bad feelings about Oregon and Washington and the role that they played. Certainly they did what was best for themselves. Certainly they did what anybody else probably would have done. But there's no mistaking that that had a direct impact on Oregon State in both from a football perspective and all the sports, but women's basketball maybe more than other. Like women's basketball, there was nothing wrong with the Pac-12. There was nothing wrong with the old world Pac-12. It was one of the best conferences, if not the best conference in America, when it came to impact and the number of teams that was playing. And we certainly saw multiple teams get to the Final Four. Certainly saw Sweet 16s where you had five or six teams that were from the Pac-12, and just the strength of that conference was evident, and it implodes. And so Oregon women's basketball and Kelly Graves, who also great coach, Final Four caliber coach, probably could have won it all in the pandemic. You want to talk about raw deals. I think by no fault of Kelly Graves, Sabrina Ionescu and Ruthie Hebert and that team would have gone to New Orleans and would have won the national championship when the pandemic hit. Graves probably understands a bad deal more than anybody, but Kelly Graves wants to play that game. He's got Oregon State, another great program in his region. And, you know, they played the game the other day, and it was evident after the game that Scott Ruick's not on board with playing the game, and that his athletic director, Scott Barnes, has signed him up for a series that maybe he doesn't feel great about. And part of it, I think, is rooted in the idea that Oregon played a role in this, and why should Oregon State help Oregon play a local game? I happen to believe these schools should be playing each other. I like baseball teams playing each other. I like basketball teams playing each other. I like football teams playing each other. I think it's good for both sides. But I understand Ruick's position. The for now part of it is interesting because it suggests to me that, look, he's been operating without a conference for two seasons. The for now may be rooted in nothing more than let me get some traction in the new world Pac-12. Let me build my roster to the point where I can contend with an Oregon that is playing in the Big Ten before I sign back on to play this game. But I'm playing this game with one arm tied behind my back. And certainly Oregon won the game by double digits in convincing fashion. Oregon is farther along on that progression than Oregon State is right now. But I do think it's a good question from a football perspective. I think people are asking, why should Oregon State continue to play the Civil War series? The argument being made that, you know, these programs have different budgets. They're playing in different conferences. Look at the media rights distributions. How does Oregon State even hope to win this game? Can they ever win this game again? I think there are questions about whether Washington can even beat Oregon if nothing changes in the Big Ten conference. There's just a hierarchy that has developed within the Big Ten, and it's really started to make me think about, you know, what is the benefit of playing this game if you're Oregon State? Because you're going to get your teeth kicked in football. In men's basketball, what is the benefit? In women's basketball, what is the benefit? I think all of these things have to be evaluated and reevaluated. But what I want for now is I want status quo for now until you can figure things out. And I know that's not going to be what Scott Ruick wants to hear. And I know it's probably not going to be what, you know, Jamarcus Shepard wants to hear at Oregon State. Like, he probably is looking over going, how do I win that game after he takes the job at Oregon State? I do think the vote of these coaches counts. Because if you're Scott Ruick and you're saying, hey, I can't compete in this game right now. I need some time to go recruit into my new conference. I need some time to figure out what is my NIL budget relative to what Oregon's spending. I think that's a fair assessment. I also think the vote of fans counts. Maybe more, probably more, a lot more than media, a lot more than my vote is the fans who are going to show up and support this game if it's played in Corvallis or if it's played in Eugene. Because, man, It is one of the great casualties of realignment. And I can remember when that all went down. The women's basketball product in the Pac-12, you had Stanford that was doing well. You had Oregon that was doing well. Oregon State was playing well. Washington State was, you know, coming off a conference tournament championship just a year earlier. And it was like all of these programs were competing at such a high level. And it was so much fun to watch. I remember being in Vegas for that last tournament and going, oh my gosh, Cal, Stanford, Oregon State, Oregon, Arizona schools, Colorado was you know, pushing Oregon. It was just a lot of fun to watch. And all of that got killed in the process. Maybe one day this gets put back together. Maybe one day we can get back to regional conferences in sports that are like the Olympic sports and the non-revenue generating sports. But for now, this is kind of the lot that you're given. And I don't blame Scott Ruick one bit for voicing his opinion and saying, I don't think this game, we should be playing this game for now. He's clearly not on the same page as his athletic director, and that's okay. And I also think that if you're an Oregon State fan, you have to be watching for the day when Scott Ruick says, okay, I'm good with this game being played, because that's going to signal that, you know, he's got it back on track. He's been able to recruit into the conference that he's in. And certainly George Fox, Oregon State, the success stories that he has had at both those places suggest that Scott Ruick will be just fine getting this back together at some point. But I think it's worth pointing out, when you have players who are saying, I'm not good playing this, or you have coaches saying, I'm not good playing this, the athletic director at the respective school has got to pay attention to that. He may not listen to it, but he must pay attention to it. And I, if I'm Scott Barnes at Oregon State, yes, he has bigger fish to fry. I'm getting a meeting with Scott Ruick right now. I'm looking at Ruick's contract saying, hey, what do I need to do to give you the job security that you need long term to rebuild this thing? What do I need to do from a contract extension standpoint? How should we be scheduling? Because the new World Pac-12 is going to be a great basketball conference with Gonzaga and San Diego State and Fresno State and Colorado State and Utah State in it. It's going to be great on the men's side. It's going to be great on the women's side. And Oregon State is a big part of that on the women's side of basketball. It might be a tentpole as far as the women's basketball product and the offering is concerned. I am eager to see what Ruick does. I am listening to what he's saying, and I'm inviting him to come on the show because I want to talk more about it. All right, we got the 5 at 5 coming up. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football as well. Steven's all stretched out. He's all warmed up. He says he's got the 5 biggest stories in sports going on. If you want more of my Monday mailbag, you can read it at johnconzano.com. Grab a free subscription. Grab a paid subscription. Whatever works for you works for me. You know that. All right, the 5 at 5 coming up, top of the hour. Leave it here. You have the bald-faced truth statewide on the BFT Radio Network.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Oregon getting into the college football playoff couldn't have had a better path, as the 5 seed worked out great for Dan Lanning and the Ducks. We've talked about that on today's show, and we're going to keep it going. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football. All right, SEC, Big Ten, at the end of this college football playoff bracket, I know you filled out your bracket already, which conference is going to be able to say they were the better conference this year?
I think it's going to be the Big Ten. So you give me Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon, who I think does have a chance to make a run, I'll take the Big Ten.
I keep looking at kind of the SEC teams, and I'm just underwhelmed. I don't think Oklahoma or Alabama can get by Indiana or Oregon or Texas Tech on that side of the bracket. And I agree with you. Because when I looked at the bracket when it first came out, even before the bracket came out, I was looking at the teams that were all sort of the top teams in the playoff. And to me, it was Ohio State. It was Georgia. Oddly, it was Notre Dame, who was listed at 9-1 on the board in Vegas. You know, it was Indiana. Then it was maybe Texas Tech or Oregon if things kind of lined up for them, as maybe they could be spoilers or teams that could be disruptors by getting to the championship game. There's nobody else that can win this thing, and there's only one SEC team in that conversation. I think if it's Georgia or bust for the SEC, and I don't love Georgia's quarterback, and so I just can't pick Georgia to get by Ohio State. So I think the Big Ten is, once again, for the third straight year, going to be like, we're the champion, and for the third straight year, I don't think the SEC is getting a team in the championship game. So All right, you've got the five biggest stories in sports. Let's do it.
The five at five. Number one.
All right, John. Well, let's start out with that CFP field as that just came out on Sunday. Let's give out the Ulster field, the ultimate almighty of all of it. So Indiana, they're the one seed after taking out Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. What a game that was. Ohio State, they fall a spot. They go to number two. Georgia's number three and Texas Tech, the Big 12 champions, these are four. So those are your four teams with a bye into the quarterfinals. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not. We don't know. We will find out. But they all have byes. Then the matchups in round one, it'll be Oregon. They will be hosting James Madison, the 12th seed out of the Sun Belt. James Madison gets in because the ACC champion did not get in. That was Duke. So the 12-5 matchup is Oregon. James Madison, the winner of that, will take on Texas Tech. We then have the 8-9 game. Alabama will be in Norman, Oklahoma, taking on John Mateer and the Sooners. Winner of that game will take on the 1 seed, Indiana, in the Rose Bowl. The 11 seed, Tulane, they won the American, beat North Texas on Friday. They'll be on the road taking out Ole Miss with the new head coach, Nolan Kiffin. Of course, these two teams did actually play each other in the regular season. Tulane traveled to Ole Miss and got absolutely dump trucked in that game. 45-10 was not even that close. Winner of that game will then take on Georgia, possibly an SEC rematch with Ole Miss of Georgia at the Sugar Bowl. And then number 10 seed Miami, they are in Texas. They're going to travel to Texas A&M in the game in the 10-7 matchup. The winner of that game will take on Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. You know, should be a fun, interesting bracket. But like we said, I don't know that there's a lot of teams that really could win this thing. But a couple of interesting matches too in the first round.
Well, the interesting thing for me for Oregon in the opening round, Bob Chesney, the coach at James Madison. You know, look, I requested him on the show today or tomorrow. James Madison came back and said he's not even with the program on Monday and Tuesday. He's in L.A. dealing with his next job at UCLA. This couldn't have lined up better for Dan Lanning and the Ducks. They're going to get a very distracted, fragmented, just happy to be there, James Madison team in the opening round. Nice tune-up. Don't get the bye. Don't get the rust. The only other games that are of interest to me in the opening round, of course, Alabama, Oklahoma. I'm hoping the Sooners, beat the pants off the Crimson Tide. At Alabama, to me, doesn't belong in this bracket. We've already got way into that. And I'm interested to see what Ole Miss looks like without Lane Kiffin. Are they galvanized? Do they play like the team that pounded Tulane earlier in the year? Or do they play more like the team that struggled against Washington State? We'll keep an eye on that. Moving on.
Number two.
All right, well, number two here. Let's talk about Notre Dame, the team that got left out of the college football playoff. They have decided they are not going to be playing in a bowl game as Notre Dame AD Pete Bevacqua. He went on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today, and he said that because of being left out and the way the ACC went about the whole thing, John, that the ACC has certainly done permanent damage to the relationship between Notre Dame and the ACC. Now, this has to do with last month, the ACC's official account on Twitter posted a side-by-side comparison of Miami and Notre Dame, accompanied by a text that said, "No hypotheticals, just facts." Also, the ACC network on Thursday and Friday, they replayed that Miami-Notre Dame game from week one more than a dozen times heading into championship weekend, despite Miami not being in the league's title game for the ACC. Now, Jim Phillips, he put out a statement saying that Notre Dame is an incredibly valued member of the ACC and there is respect. But he said, with that said, when it comes to football, we have a responsibility to support and advocate for all 17 of our football playing member institutions. And I stand behind our conference efforts to do that leading up to the college football playoff. Now, of course, Notre Dame, they play most of their sports in the ACC, just not football. They're an independent still, so they have that relationship.
Well, look, the ACC's got to support its full member, and that's Miami. But the message from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee was clear. They were telling Notre Dame, you don't have a home. You don't belong to a conference. You don't have the protection. You don't have the cover that the SEC gives to Alabama, right? And ESPN, their media partner. You don't have the cover that the ACC is giving to Miami. The message to Notre Dame is get into a conference. Pac-12, you want to call them? Moving on.
Number three.
I can't wait for the Beavs to head down to, to Notre Dame and touchdown Jesus. I think that would be great. Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier, he officially pled not guilty today to charges that he helped gamblers placing bets on his performance during those NBA games. Rozier, he formally entered the plea deal of the arraignment in federal court in Brooklyn on wire fraud and money laundering conspiracy charges. He was released on a $3 million bond. which was secured by his home in Florida. Same thing that Chauncey Billups had to do. And prosecutors say Rozier conspired, of course, with his friends to help them win bets on his performance back in 2023 when he was on the Hornets. Rozier also cannot, he was also instructed by Judge Clay Kaminsky to not gamble, have firearms, or to have any contact with victims, co-defendants, and witnesses in the case. And Rozier, who is from Ohio, he had to surrender his passport and will be restricted traveling between Florida, Ohio, and New York unless granted prior approval. So both Rozier and Blazers head coach Chauncey Billups, they have pled not guilty of these separate schemes, the high-stakes mafia-backed illegal poker games and to rigging basketball games.
Presumed innocent until proven guilty, right? The presumption of innocence going on in the background of all this. I fully expect that, look, these guys were not the primary targets of the Department of Justice and the FBI. I think they're looking for cooperating witnesses here. We'll see how that unfolds.
Number four.
The NFL is kind of wide open, the AFC, with the Kansas City Chiefs losing on Sunday night to the Texans. They may be out of the playoffs, it looks like. And one of the teams that was playing well was the Indianapolis Colts. Well, they soon may, too, be out of the playoff race as their quarterback, Daniel Jones, who's having a bounce-back season, he suffered a season-ending Achilles tear in the first quarter of the Colts' loss to the Jaguars on Sunday. Coach Shane Steichen, he confirmed that news today as Jones is set to have surgery later on this week. Now, the Colts will be in a really tough spot. They'll be turning to rookie quarterback Riley Leonard, the former Notre Dame quarterback, and he'll be starting his first game for the 8-5 Colts against the Seattle Seahawks up in Seattle on Sunday. A rested Seahawks in front of that crowd. Going to be really tough with the Colts now. They're 8-5. They're tied for the final wild card spot in the AFC, but man, just a tough break as Jones was already playing through what was believed to be a hairline fracture in his left fibula. He then tears his Achilles in his right leg. Just tough for the Colts, man. They were playing so well, but they've lost three straight. Now they'll be turning to a rookie quarterback. Going up to Seattle, can't expect the good things out of that. Looks like the Colts, storybook season is going to come to an end.
The draft for the board, the odds board in Vegas, Rams currently the favorite at 4-1 to win the Super Bowl, followed by the Seahawks, Packers, Bills, Broncos. Those are your favorites now on the board. The NFL is wild.
Number five.
Well, and speaking of wild NFL, we got Monday Night Football. That's where we're heading out. Might be a good one tonight. Eagles taking on the Chargers in L.A. Eagles been struggling. Chargers have some injuries, but Herbert looking like he might play. We'll see. Eagles-Chargers should be a good one tonight, John.
But look, I'm excited about how this NFL season unfolds. I'm also aware that the college football playoff bracket is starting to remind me a little bit of the NFL playoffs, where so many teams and so much parity is being fostered in the NFL. I wonder if college football will ever get there. Certainly with the Big Ten and the SEC, you know, these programs all, you know, sniffing around championships every year. But, you know, I think it'll be fun when college football figures out some kind of revenue sharing model that levels the playing field. We can see ACC, Big 12, and even the Group of Five schools with a chance to get in. And oh, by the way, if you're out there complaining that the Group of Five schools are in the bracket, that's what a tournament is. The NCAA tournament includes some teams that we never expect to win it. They're called Cinderellas. Let's wait and see what happens. Certainly it would help if Tulane or James Madison play close games in the opening round. But I'm not mad about them being in the tournament. They did what was necessary to get there. And oh, by the way, that was part of the antitrust settlement that the power conferences signed and agreed to allow access to the college football playoff for the Group of Five schools, which comprise about 50% of the schools in the country. All right, Monday Night Football's coming up. Steven, we got a big week ahead. The bald-faced truth not here for a long time, just a good time.
What's that?